the superintendent's episode you're about to hear was recorded in San Diego, California as part of the AASA conference. AASA brings district and school leaders from across the country together for important conversations about what they're doing in their districts, the results they're having, the results they're not having, and how we can all work together to make sure that every child can succeed in school. These conversations were heartfelt, they were interesting, they were open and candid, and I cannot thank the superintendents who are a part of it enough. From the Fort Worth ISD superintendent who told me that in her district, she's not just the superintendent, but she's also the largest employer, the largest restaurant, and the largest place of transportation. I was absolutely floored to, you know, really have that put in front of me. And to the LAUSD superintendent who told us some real hard truths about staffing and about the different things that are happening for teachers and for leaders across the country. We had so many leaders stop to talk with us. They're mini episodes because they had places to be and conversations to have, but these were inspiring and we're so excited to share them with you. Thanks for being here on More Than a Test. I'm Laura Glab with Amira Learning and More Than a Test, and I'm here at AASA, and I am so excited to be joined with Paul. Paul, tell us a little bit about Lincoln, Nebraska.
Sure. I'm Paul Gosman, superintendent of schools in Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm in my second school year in Lincoln.
Okay.
I've been a school superintendent for a little over 20 years, but I've done so in other states. I was in Sioux Falls, South Dakota area.
Okay.
And then Sioux City, Iowa. And then I've just taken over in Lincoln about a year and a half ago and very much enjoying the opportunities in Lincoln. I'm originally from Nebraska. I'm a Husker.
We talked about this.
Red. and so I actually grew up just a little ways out of Lincoln, in a town called Fremont, and then went to Lincoln for school, where I became a band director to start. And so, the Lincoln district is a really, I'm very proud to be a part of it. It's a high performing district. It's urban suburban.
Okay.
And there's a state law in Nebraska that Lincoln can't have suburbs. That's not how the law is worded, but that's the effect of
interesting.
The law. So the city only grows by annexing new property. And so it's a one town, one district setup.
Okay.
Which is different than the national model of an urban center with a bunch of suburbs around it. And I'm really proud of how the staff and the community come together to serve the 43,000 students in that district.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of people don't think Nebraska.
Significantly larger than I was expecting.
Yeah, so we just opened our 8th high school.
Okay.
This school year, actually. 7th high school was opened last year. The district has gone through a growth of about 8,000 students in the last decade.
Wow.
So it really has been growing. I think we're going to level off now just a little bit when looking at live birth rates. But very diverse in its diversity. And a lot of people don't think about that when they think of Nebraska.
No, not at all.
Either. We've got 150 some home languages spoken.
Oh, my goodness.
We're a district of just around 50% poverty.
Okay.
17% of our students with exceptional needs and such. So, very proud of the 8,000 member staff of the district and the community. We all have to come together. We get to come together to serve students in a district like that where you don't have suburbs.
I feel like you've just surprised me 5 different times in this like 1 minute synopsis. So I have so many questions now.
Yeah.
Okay. So 43,000 kids in Lincoln, Nebraska. How much space? Like, do you have kids? Like, I picture like corn and things like that. Are there kids pretty far out taking a bus in or
yes.
Like?
Yes. You know, you ought to come to Lincoln. And
I'm
going to
have to now.
It's the state capital, and we have a gorgeous state capital. We are to be exact, we're 167 square miles.
Okay.
So it is
a big space,
big
yeah.
footprint, which makes calling inclement weather days a challenge at times because it's nice over here and it's bad over there, you know, whatever.
Right.
And it tends to make everybody just grumpy. But I, you know, I absolutely love it. And you're correct in that, you know, our transportation system is serving kids from quite a great number of distances, as we have about 70 student facilities, I should say.
Okay, so, you know, you and I were talking before. I live in Boulder, Colorado,
right?
So we've got a little bit of a rivalry, but we're also neighbors.
Yeah.
And so when you tell me that your district is growing and that you're building high schools, I'm blown away because in Colorado, we're just shutting down schools,
right? Really?
Boulder in particular has had a pretty big hit to student population, Denver as well. Why do you think Lincoln's growing?
Well, if you look at business and industry, which, you know, would indicate some of that, Lincoln is often referred to as the Silicon Prairie, okay. where a lot of technological startups okay. are happening. And, you know, it's a community that's just reinvented itself a couple of different ways in different times. The community comes together to solve challenges and to make things happen. And so, you know, certainly that there's also, in addition to some of the tech startups and whatnot, there are some industry there,
right?
Significant sized, Kawasaki plant and other industry that's around there. And so, it's just been a blessing. I mean, obviously as school superintendents, we prefer to grow,
right.
You know, rather than deal with enrollment
decline. Well, it
increases
the money.
Yeah, it does, usually, yeah.
And so, I got the fire teachers, so that's positive,
that's
too.
That's just the way it is. But I do think we're going to enter into a kind of a leveling off, as I mentioned earlier, but that's to be understood for now. You know, the university, like a lot of universities right now, are going through a little bit of decline in enrollment
okay.
as well.
It's interesting because, you know, before we spoke, I've talked to a bunch of districts today, and I've talked to some rural ones and some urban ones, and
sure.
I was picturing you more in the rural area. I was picturing right. you like a Laramie, Wyoming, I guess, is kind of,
right.
which is significantly fewer students at 43,000. and so I'm curious, one of the things that I've heard a lot of superintendents say is they love coming to this conference because they get to have colleagues to commiserate and really like share the experience with. Have you had that moment? Have you had that time today where like you're spending time with, and what are the issues that you're discussing?
Sure. So I've been here for the last couple of days, and I don't miss this conference, the AASA conference
really?
Each year, because it's great learning. It's great professional development, but it's also rejuvenating in the sense of connecting with colleagues and solution providers, you know,
right.
some might say vendors, but I'm always look at, you know,
right.
solving the challenges. And I have had those moments at
right.
this event where I've been able to connect with you know, good friends and colleagues from across the country.
Right.
Interestingly, you know, when you're talking about the topics that are there, you know, certainly we're living in a trauma-ridden society right,
right.
now. And that's unfortunate. And so some of the mental health things that are so often spoken about. And that's been interesting to learn a bit this session about, you know, diagnosing and understanding and discovering when students need extra help. Also a great amount of, on a completely different topic, but a great amount of discussion on AI or
right.
artificial intelligence. And I'm really pleased with some of the sessions and solution providers who are embracing AI.
Right.
You know, I think for a long time, we saw AI as a monster in the closet. You
right.
know, it was going to ruin education, or we have to embrace it.
Right. I'll tell you, I was on with an academic, the chief academic officer from South Carolina, and he said, and I'll tell you the sentence that he said, and I want you to react to it. He said, to not be using AI in the classroom at this point is malpractice.
I especially agree for our staff members to embrace it, because the students are going to embrace it whether we want them to or not.
Right.
I mean, I remember, this is kind of a crazy example, but I remember being in junior high school myself.
Right.
And we were doing something in mathematics, and, you know, calculators had become all the rage because I'm old, right? And so I remember our teacher saying, well, what do you think? Are you going to have a calculator with you everywhere you go in the future? And,
right.
you know, of course, she was thinking the answer was no.
Right.
But, you know, clearly here's my calculator, you know, and we have to think of AI much the same way that,
yeah.
you know, it's part of who we are now. Those devices that I just pulled out of my
right.
pocket, we thought they might go away. And
exactly.
They, you know, so when you have things like students who are writing and learning to read, doing math, and you want them to show their work. And you've got, as a teacher, 180 students, and you've got a 4-page essay that you've given them.
Right.
It takes them so long to grade all of that. With the new tools of AI, the teachers can become far more effective. They can do more direct instruction.
All right. So which solutions are you really excited about?
You mean which, like, company?
Yep. Obviously company. You love Amira. We all love Amira. But
yep.
I'll tell you something that I heard recently that was a game changer for me, because I was a middle school principal at one point.
Right.
She said, we used AI, we put in the data around our master schedule.
Right.
She's like, it wasn't perfect, but man, it got us close.
Oh,
and
yeah.
think about the hours we have lost to master schedule. Anybody who's been a principal knows.
Right.
it is a lifetime of the hours that are going to master schedules, right?
Right.
And so that was a really good example. So tell me a little bit about...
Well, okay. So I understand the context of the question now. And, you know, last week I was able to spend some time with Amira.
Oh, great.
Learning far more about it than I ever had.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I don't get to do all of the tactical things that I wish I could do in a school district of 43,000 students.
Right.
But I went back to my team that I get to serve with there and was raving about Amira and
right.
some of the AI stuff that we were just talking about.
Right.
But also some other providers as well that are doing, you know, certainly Amira in the reading, but you know, some of the other areas. And I do think that this is a real, if we embrace this the right way, this is a time for real transformation
right.
in the profession of teaching.
Right.
To serve kids in a better way.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're really hitting on it. I think one of my favorite stories about Amira was that, you know, our CEO, Mark, will tell you that the reason he started Amira was he had a teacher who loved Accelerated Reader, which is one of his products from a long time ago. And she was talking about how much she loved it, but she said to him, like, it's great, but could you just do something that would, like, actually help kids? And I think that there's really this opportunity for data to really help kids and for AI to really not just be... like a time, you know, like something that kids do, not just clicking, not just games, but really do something for kids. And I think that's pretty cool. So
yeah, and it's nice how it can be done at the student's pace. It doesn't always have to be done just in the direct classroom.
Yeah.
There's just so many opportunities.
So many places. And we're not relying on parents anymore because they don't have to be trained in education to get help. That's totally true. How many years have you been a superintendent?
Little over 20, I think now. I'm trying to remember when I first became a superintendent. It was back in, well, almost 20, I should say, because I started in 2005 in South Dakota.
Okay, so the reason I ask is, I've talked to superintendents all day, some on the show, some not, and
sure.
There was one who said to me, you know, like, this is his sixth year, and he just looked at me, he's like, I'm just done. Like, I cannot do anymore. And you seem like you could do this for another 22, 32 years.
I don't know about 32, but
okay.
I am blessed to be a school superintendent, and I don't think you get people that say that often.
Yeah,
but,
I don't think so either.
You know, it's actually sometimes it's challenging when you're around town and you hear people say to you that, boy, I wouldn't do your job for $1 million.
Right.
And I said, you know, well, you could pay me that if you wanted, I guess. But, I don't think they understand that every time you turn around, there's another blessing.
Right.
There's a reward. There's a student who's achieving. There are great things that are happening. And in addition to all those student success items, I just work with incredibly, incredibly talented people, experts, at all levels of the organization there in Lincoln. And I feel very excited to be able to continue maybe for another 10 or...
Do you think that switching districts contributed to your longevity?
I do. My previous district, I was in for 15 years. And at year 10, I started over. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you go into a district, a lot of superintendents will go through a transition plan, an entry plan, that kind of thing.
Right.
When I hit year 10 in my previous district, I redid the entry plan and the transition plan, even though I didn't move into the district new.
Right.
And that was important to me being able to succeed up until year 15. But it was time for that district to experience different leadership.
Right.
And my wife and I, Susie and I, we've been together 35 years. We knew that Lincoln was home. The opening was at the right time. And so we're blessed to be back there.
So is this like your dream superintendent
yes.
job?
Yes. My whole career, if I could have picked, you know, where I would go to, you know, hopefully retire from, it would have been Lincoln because it really is a great place.
You exude such joy and energy. Tell me, but what's keeping you up at night? What are the things that you're like, we're not getting on this one?
Occasionally legislative items that, you know, dealing with funding and decisions that are being made legislatively about the way in which we serve students. You know, Nebraska typically is a red state
right.
politically, and I don't need to get into politics here, but, you know, it seems that red states more often than not really believe in local control.
Right.
And I appreciate that.
Right.
But they believe in it until they don't agree with your decisions at the local level. And so occasionally we were getting pushed back a little bit, but, you know, certainly we'll work our way through that. We're fortunate to have good people running for the legislature. And so, you know, we're thankful that they do that work. I'm, you know, often working with individual board members on their passions. We've got a really engaged and I would even say expert school board in Lincoln. And we're, you know, certainly blessed to have them. But you know, in terms of keeping up at night, I try to learn about the passions of each board member and what they might like to see happen. And so, you know, I look at their, you know, desires. We're a director district, meaning okay. that they all come from a ward or a part, area. Portion okay. of the community. And so, you know, certainly that, and then just the service to students in the trauma filled world in which we live right now.
Yeah, definitely. So what are you doing for mental health?
Well, we, you know, every district starts in a different place. One of the things we've done since I came there or arrived there in Lincoln is more counseling staff, more psychologists, okay. Just getting more people in with students.
Yeah.
And not just trying to react to challenge, but trying to prevent is really important.
Okay, but those are expensive initiatives, right? People is the most expensive thing.
Yeah.
How are you doing? I mean, a lot. What I've heard a lot from this chair is, you know, the ESSER funds are drying up. Are you feeling like y'all? I mean, you're growing, so maybe you're in okay place.
Well, no. I mean, well, you know, I being a superintendent for 20 years, I don't think any of those 20 years that I've thought, oh gosh, the legislature just gave us just what we needed this year. You know, so not that kind of a feeling.
Right.
And the ESSER cliff is real.
Right.
And we bought, if you will, a lot of new services and supports
right.
with the funding. And now we have to climb back out of a fair amount of it because, you know, but thankfully this district, Lincoln Public Schools, has done a great deal of work to study which initiatives are more effective than others. What, you know, what's the return on the investment that
right.
we made? And it's going to be challenging to step away from certain, you know, programs and initiatives. But it's going to be done with the right purpose in terms of looking at the data, seeing where the data leads us.
Yeah, that's really great. All right, like, tell me one thing about this conference. What's something that you thought about, learned about, spoke about in the last couple of days that you're going to take back for sure?
Yeah, you know, we had a conversation in a session yesterday that was about ecosystems and really just talking about the ecosystem of the school culture in the way in which services are provided outside of school time.
Right.
You know, obviously we focus so much on what happens during the school day, but with agency partners, with you know, some of this ESSER money that we were just talking about, you know, we've become, it's funny because we always say our core mission is academic achievement.
Right.
If we hit a global pandemic, it's not what we did first.
Right.
We did a lot of other things. And so those things have grown and served students well. Prioritizing which ones of those, you know, it's kind of the same answer to the last question. This session on the ecosystems of serving students around the school day and the community was really enlightening to me. And I think we've got work to do there.
That's really great. I'll tell you, one of the things that kind of relates that I heard today was, you know, it was a superintendent from a district, and she said, you know, I'm not just a school district. I'm the largest meal provider. I'm the largest restaurant in town. I'm the largest transportation agency in town. I'm the largest employer in town. And I think so often we forget just all of the ways that there is a full ecosystem around schools. And it's not
absolutely
just what's happening
is.
In classrooms. So.
Yeah. And, you know, especially in a community like Lincoln, where there is only one school district.
Right.
Well, there are private schools and they're good as well.
Right.
But you know, maybe they don't teach math quite as well as we do. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But they're very good as well. But you know, we are the largest of all of those things.
Right.
You know, I do think it's best in a community if the school district, the governmental agency, isn't the largest employer.
Right.
And we're fortunate that we're not.
Right.
And so that just is an indication of the economy being a little stronger in that particular community.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. Let me ask you a couple of more things before I let you go, because this has been just super fun. And I've learned so much. Now I actually want to go to Lincoln, Nebraska,
well,
which I hadn't
seen.
It's
an awesome place.
Okay. Let me tell you something that happens in Boulder, Colorado. And you tell me if this happens in Lincoln and
okay.
how you manage it. So it snows. The school either calls a delay or the district either calls a delay or a closure, whatever they call.
Right.
If you are on Facebook at 9:30 a.m., the world is exploding. You would think that whatever they called is going to like ruin lives.
You
have these kinds of reactions from families?
I do, but I have noted that Lincoln is far more polite about it than Sioux City, Iowa was.
Oh, really?
My last 15 years in Sioux City, it didn't matter whether the decision was to close or start late or open or, you know, whatever. I would regularly receive about 300 to 400 phone calls of opinion, you know, passionate opinion.
About the snow day.
Yes. Lincoln, I don't know if there's that many phone calls and they're filtered before they get to me or what, but Lincoln is a district that made the decision years ago because of our size, and I mean size geographically,
right,
as well as enrollment, that we're either open or we're not.
Right.
We don't start late. We don't.
Right. Oh, okay. Interesting.
We don't stop early, you know, that kind of thing. So, we're making a lot of our decisions lately on forecasts that occasionally come true. Sometimes they don't. I sense a little bit more patience there with, you know, you made the decision that you thought was appropriate. And so, yeah, it does happen. People are passionate. We started our second semester with some real snowstorms.
Right.
In Lincoln. And we had four snow days, wow, not in a row, but in two consecutive weeks. I do remember getting texts from parents that said, if you don't take our kids tomorrow, I'm gonna come over to your house. And I mean, they were joking,
you know?
but you know, we've gotten through that. It was a hard start to the semester because of that weather, because the kids need that structure and that
right
normal schedule.
I guess the reason I bring it up more than I care, you know, snow days, whatever, you know, this
yeah
happened,
it's just part of the job.
It is the way it's gonna go,
except here in San Diego where
right
I don't think they do that.
I guess more my question is that if they're so passionate about snow days, I can only imagine the kind of thing that happens when they really don't, like when it's something that matters a little bit more than snow.
Yeah, I suppose there's some of that there. It's always surprising to me, though, that like there will be times where, you know, we've got our complete and total budget in Lincoln's about $1 billion a year,
right,
for our school district, $500 million general fund budget every year. And, you know, we'll have meetings to set that and to vote on it and to, you know, and people don't come at all.
Right.
But something small like a snow day or a book that's in that library over there, whatever.
Don't even.
And all of a sudden, woo, boy. And so, you know, I respect that we are serving people's children and we're using their money.
Right.
And those are two of the most important worldly things. And so we've got to respect the fact that they've got a say in this and appreciate that different perspectives are at play.
Well, and I think one of the things that I feel like you've said over and over again is that, like, you're also dealing with trauma-informed responses, right?
Yep.
And so maybe, let's just take it this way, that parents have their own traumas,
yeah,
and snow days is, and honestly, if snow days is where they want to take it out, I might be okay with that. It's, like, that's when I can let run off my shoulders. The choice is, I did the best I could, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's, you know, something to be said for that.
It's funny because 5 years ago, Twitter was the place to be,
right,
for snow days. And you would banter back and forth with the kids and have fun. And, you know, I mean,
it, nice,
occasionally somebody crossed the line, but generally it was a healthy environment. And, you know, social media has changed so much even in the last 5 years. It's not even called Twitter anymore, I guess. You know, what I do often as a social media superintendent is I repost things our communications department has put out, and then I don't read comments because people are, you know, that filter is gone.
Right. And you got to focus on what really matters.
Absolutely,
right? Which is
right.
Kids. All right. Well, last two questions. Tell me the best advice you've ever been given.
Best advice I've ever been given?
Yes.
Call the lawyer.
Really?
Yeah. Just, you know, as you're becoming a new school superintendent, you cannot believe how you are surrounded by so many people and you feel so lonely all at one time.
Wow.
And you just want to make certain that your decision-making is sound and, you know, of course, rooted in legal
right
propriety. Former school superintendent that I was replacing, he was retiring in another district, left me that. And when he said it, I thought, well, that's kind of silly.
Right.
Great advice.
I'll tell you, I once was a principal and I had a parent, I mean, just a principal, not even a superintendent, who sent this just like curse laden email to me and a teacher. And all I responded, and I didn't even know that, I was young and stupid. I just wrote it back because I didn't know what else to say. I said, I have to run this by the district legal team before I can respond. Man, it changed their tone right away.
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah. So, and I'm not always looking for a legal fight or anything. It's just, it's almost like the attorney is in essence a colleague,
right,
in a way, to just help you think through things. And of course, you know, from that is an extension of our networks are really important too,
yeah,
our colleagues and such.
Awesome. Okay, my last question. One book you think everyone should read?
The Leadership Challenge by James Kouzes and Barry Posner.
Wow, that was a really quick, most people have to think about that answer. Tell me why that
it's
book.
It's a leadership Bible, and it's underrated. It has changed, it's a book about change leadership.
Yeah.
Leading change initiatives. And I think what happened is it came out just before, like, social, I mean, the internet was there, but social, whatever, and so on. And so, you know, the leadership challenge, they've even got a website that's, you know, got some supportive tools and materials that are there as well.
Right.
But it's a great book, but a process that allows you to go through change initiatives with proper work. Another one, if I may.
Please do.
The First 90 Days.
Okay.
Is a book that's not an education book. It was written out of Harvard, which I guess is education, but out of the Harvard Business School.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, the name of the author is escaping me, but it's called The First 90 Days.
Okay.
And it's about moving into a new position,
right,
or district. You know, if you do the right things for the first 90 days, you're going to be successful for the next 90 years. And,
right,
and I love how that book talks about whether, you know, some people are more of a farmer, some people are more of a hunter,
okay,
as leaders.
Okay.
And I remember the book changing my thinking when it said, you know, the kind of leader that got you this job may not be the kind of leader that you need to be while you serve in this job.
Wow.
And just to think through those kinds of things.
That's really powerful. I feel like I've heard a lot today, superintendents say to me, you have to remember it's not about you. And I think that's a really good, you know, illustration of that, right?
Yeah.
Like when you go through these long hiring processes, it feels like,
yep,
it's about me. But when
it
you
does.
Get there, it's really about the people you serve.
It absolutely is. And it's so important to get into the district the right way.
That's really lovely. Thank you so much for this conversation. Thanks for like running over and making time.
It's oh, sure.
Really
Thanks
great.
For the opportunity.
I'll see you in Lincoln, I think. Hi, I'm Laura Glad with Amira Learning, and we are here live from the Education Conference with superintendents, and I'm here with Dr. Schroeder. And we talked earlier. You were telling me your district is special. Thanks for being here. Tell me a little about your district.
My district, Schuyler Community Schools, is amazing. It's an amazing place. We are a minority-majority school, which means the majority of our students are Hispanic. In our case, about 50% of our students are from Guatemala.
Okay.
And that has really afforded us the opportunity to have a lot of different experiences and kids from varying backgrounds. And it has really enriched our school district.
I'm going to be honest. I was in Antigua, Guatemala a week ago, and I don't really think, you know, I was up on a volcano, I was looking at the sunset, and it wasn't like I was like, you know what I want to do is go to Nebraska.
Right, right.
How is that happening, and what does that mean for your schools?
Well, I think for Nebraska, in general, I think my belief is that a lot of people see Nebraska as, you know, it is, you know, the good life.
Right.
And there's opportunity here, and we have safety, and we have really good people in Nebraska.
Okay.
And so if you're looking for a place to land and resettle, I think Nebraska is very attractive. For our schools, it does offer a challenge because we need to have very robust EL programs and, you know, an understanding of what families need and how to support them.
Right.
You know, sometimes families that come through our doors, not only do they, you know, need help enrolling, but, you know, some of our families need help, like, where do I go to get electricity, turn on the, you know,
right,
where do I go to get utilities,
right,
you know? And so we try to support in every way we can because the more we support the family and the parents, the more we support the child.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. Again, I don't picture Nebraska having a lot of bilingual or multilingual teachers. How are you getting teachers to support these kids?
Well, right now the teacher shortage is tough across the nation.
Right.
We are very lucky. We have a really good, staff, but we also are experiencing the shortages too.
Okay.
So one of the ways is, reaching out to, groups that work internationally to hire teachers.
Okay.
So we are working with a group right now that, hires from the Philippines.
Okay.
And so, and these are people that are, you know, highly qualified, have experience teaching. Many come bilingual, which is helpful for us.
Great.
So we're having to think outside the box right now. You know, the days of putting an advertisement out for, say, a fourth grade teacher and having 35 applicants, that's over right now.
Wow.
So hopefully it comes back. But we are having to be creative in how we hire.
So your kids are coming from Guatemala. Your teachers are coming from the Philippines. How do you address that as a leader?
Well, we just started working with that group from the Philippines,
mm-hmm,
so haven't experienced that in total yet.
Okay.
But you know, everybody, even if you're, even if you were born and raised in the United States and we hire you as a teacher, everybody comes from a different background, depending on the state, depending on your upbringing, depending on your beliefs.
Right.
And so the bottom line, as we get new families, new students, and new staff from all over, continuing to maintain the focus of what is best for our kids.
Right.
And that's that. If that's our bottom line, every time we make a decision,
right,
every time we talk about what to start and what to stop, it always comes back to how does this best for our kids, then we're going to stay on the right track.
I feel like I've heard a lot of superintendents. I've done so many interviews today, and a lot of them are saying it's just all about the kids. You go back to the kids. But something else they've said is that this community is really important to them, that being at this conference is really valuable.
Absolutely.
Because you have an opportunity to kind of like share in the pain and the joys of the job.
Oh, not only that, we have such an opportunity. Like, I was just at a booth meeting about safety.
Right.
And met a superintendent from Alaska who is having some of the same, you know, looking at that same area. And so we exchanged contact information, and now we're going to be working together, or at least communicating with each other over this next year on ideas. Mm-hmm. And how do we continue to evolve this idea of safety and creating a safe place for our kids, but without creating it feeling like a lockdown institution. So not only does the conference offer the ability to, you know, learn from various speakers, but the ability to hear what other people in my position are doing in other states, but also the chance to build relationships with them,
yeah,
and to start working directly with them is priceless, truly.
All right, I have other questions, but I have to know. So you've got kids coming from Guatemala. You've got teachers in the Philippines. Your colleague now is from Alaska that you're reaching out to.
Sure.
Have you always been someone who just like is willing to be open to anybody?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I truly believe that every idea I have is probably it probably leans more toward the bad side than the good. I mean, it's a rough idea. And the more people you involve in helping you figure out, you know, if you start with something and then you involve people,
yeah,
from all backgrounds, all disciplines, pretty soon it becomes something amazing.
Yeah.
You just have to be willing to let go a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
It's funny you say that. My CEO often says to me, you know, Laura, you just got to get something out. And once your ideas get out there, you'll get feedback and it'll get better.
Absolutely.
But you got to put something, because I'm a perfectionist.
You can ask my staff. A lot of meetings start with, okay, this is probably a bad idea. I'm going to share it anyhow, and then let's try to turn it into something better or figure out something else to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was the last idea that started like that?
Oh, God. There's so many. I can't even think of a specific one. But
right, in
our district, in any district I've been in, the folks, the teachers, the parents, the leaders that are open and willing to listen and be vulnerable.
Right.
You know? I don't have to be right. I just want to get it right.
Right.
Those are the people that really make a difference for our kids. And so it's not always easy for me because I want to have the answer. But I have learned through trial and error that don't be so attached to your idea. Be attached to trying to make it work the best it can for our kids.
I think that really resonates with me. Wanting to have the answer is something that I definitely struggle with, and I love to be the one to raise my hand and
yep,
be like, look at
absolutely,
me.
Absolutely.
And I think that the idea that really it's about what happens at the end is even way more special than
absolutely
that original. No one remembers who raised their hand at the beginning,
no,
right?
No. No, it's about the kids and how they graduate and trying to help all of our kids have the options that they want to live the kind of life they want to live.
All right. So tell me something about, you know, in this conference that we're at today, what's something that you've commiserated with other leaders about that is kind of happening for everybody?
The challenge of staffing.
Really? That's shortage is real.
The teacher shortage is real. The staff shortage in general is real. Safety is another big one. And then also mental health.
Really?
You know, we have staff and students. You know, now that we're coming off of COVID, there's a lot of challenges still.
Right.
And we need to find ways to support our folks and our kids so that they're getting the help they need.
Right.
Instead of trying to figure it out themselves and struggling.
Right.
So I think that's a big piece as well.
Okay. And what's something you're celebrating at this conference with other superintendents?
What we do. I mean, people every day send us their most prized possession, their most prized, you know, their kids. And it is a privilege and an honor to have that. So to make sure we, you know, realize that. So even though it's a hard day or a hard year or different issues come up, don't forget to take time to celebrate the fact that we get to do an amazing thing.
Right.
You know, it's an opportunity that not everybody gets.
How long have you been a superintendent?
This will be my fourth year.
Okay. So that's, I mean, long is what I hear, right? Like three is kind of the hero's journey.
Right.
So when you think about you're in your fourth year, so next year will be five?
Yes. Yeah, this is my first year at a new district, though.
Okay. So you did 3 years at which district?
Elm Creek.
Okay.
Little district outside of Kearney in Nebraska.
Okay.
Yep. And then this is my first year at Schuyler Community Schools.
Kearney, that's not far from Colorado, right?
It's about 5 hours.
Okay. But yeah, but you're in that area. I live in Boulder, so that makes sense. Okay. Okay. So then you switched. And so what was the switch really important for your longevity, being able to, after a few years, go somewhere else? Or is that just the door that opened?
No, it was actually, it was a district that I've long been attracted to. So I originally was in a district called Crete.
Okay.
That was a minority majority school.
Okay.
And I've always kind of been attracted to schools that have a diverse population.
Okay.
And a real challenge to how do we serve everybody.
Right.
And so when I went to Elm Creek, it was about 400 kids and not very diverse.
Okay.
And I just, I had a really good experience there. We got a lot of good things accomplished. But for me, there was just something missing. And when this came open, and it was the only position I applied for in of state, if I was going to leave, this was the one. And I was lucky enough to get offered the position.
What do you think makes you like? I mean, I think a lot of people end up in districts that look like them, right? It's their community. It's be no surprise if I was in Boulder, Colorado, leading a district, right? What do you think it is about you that makes you want to kind of go somewhere different, do something different?
You know, I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska, in a part of Lincoln that was very, very poor.
Okay.
I was a free and reduced lunch student, kind of. And I was the first one to graduate from college in my family. So, you know, supposedly the deck was stacked against me, so to speak. But because I had great parents and great teachers, I'm Dr. Schroeder now.
Wow.
And so for me, I guess to try to ensure that every kid has that same opportunity, regardless of how they start out, it's kind of a big piece.
Yeah.
So that's why I love what I'm doing.
That's incredible. So you love it.
I do. Very much.
Okay. I've talked to a few superintendents today that are tired and they may not want to sit in the seat. They're so tired.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to someone who is feeling like the job's gotten to be too much?
You know, can I mention a specific author's name?
I would love that. That would be great.
Okay. So it was about 5 or 6 years ago that I was getting to that burnout point,
right.
And, I found Brené Brown
After My Own Heart.
Yep. And I read Daring to Lead and then every other book she had,
right.
Watched her videos. And it reminded me not only why I do what I do, but, you know, she has a great statement where she talks about, if you're not in the pit with me,
right,
you know, then you're just
man in the arena.
Yeah, the man in the arena. You're just background noise.
Right.
And sometimes that's the stuff that drags us down is, you know, you make decisions and people do disagree with you, and that's okay. But sometimes it's the folks that really just want what they want, and it's less about the kids.
Right.
And sometimes we get, we start to listen to that too much, and it starts to drag us down. And by following her teachings and re-listening to her books many, many times over the last several years, it reminds me to keep the main thing the main thing.
Right.
My main thing is our kids. And as long as I, you know, wrap up each day believing that I made the best decisions I could with our kids' benefits in mind, I'm good.
That's really good. The Fort Worth ISD superintendent was on earlier, and she said, you have to remember it's not about you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like what you're saying is so true because it's easy to say that. Yeah. But in that moment when you're disagreeing with somebody or your project is failing,
yeah,
it feels like it's about you, right? And so That, I love that. I love that you brought Brene Brown too. I don't know if you know, the man in the arena originally is a Teddy Roosevelt. Yeah,
absolutely.
Quote.
Absolutely.
I just read a book about him called River of Doubt.
Oh, I haven't read that.
Oh my gosh, you have to. It's about how when he lost his third bid for presidency, he went on this trip down the Amazon and like they should have died. It's the craziest book ever. It doesn't even seem real.
Okay.
But I also learned in that book that at one point he was shot during a speech. Did you know this?
I did not know that.
He was shot during a speech and he continued and finished the speech. He was shot in the chest and lived because the speech was in his breast pocket and it was so thick that the bullet only got so far through
him. Oh my gosh.
But he stayed and finished the speech. Can you imagine?
Oh geez.
Talk about a man in the arena.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've actually printed that very same speech off for principals when they've
right.
You know, when they're getting beat up a little bit, when they're trying to do the right thing for kids, but you know, sometimes the naysayers are the people that, you know, have different motives,
right,
are kind of getting, you know, getting loud. And right. So I've literally printed that speech off and just said, hey, if you can take strength from this, because it's powerful.
Right.
So
I think it's so true in this moment with social media, with things like that, principals and superintendents are taking so many hits from so many people. If I've ever thought about being a superintendent, I rethink it on snow days in Boulder, because when those get announced, right, Facebook is just filled with people saying,
oh yeah,
should have been a snow day, should have not been a snow day, should have not, you know, and it's like, come on, it's a snow day.
Yeah, exactly.
Like of all the things that we have to deal with, like really, this is the one that's going to be.
This lights the fire.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's so true. All right, let me ask you two last questions.
Okay.
Number one, best advice you've ever been given.
Be true to yourself and trust your gut.
Do you ever ignore your gut?
Not anymore.
That's good. All right, and one book you think everyone should read?
Oh, Daring to Lead.
I'm glad you went Brene Brown. I think that's great.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thanks for spending some time with us. It's been a great conversation. Super inspiring. Enjoy the rest of the conference.
And thank you.
Thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us on the More Than a Test podcast. If you found this conversation valuable, subscribe to our YouTube channel and find us on your favorite podcast platform. At Amira Learning, we believe every child deserves a chance to become a reader, and we're excited to be part of this conversation. See you next week, and thanks for joining.